This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome once again to the 1912 Exiles podcast, the podcast made by Newport County fans for Newport County fans. We're recording this evening, on Monday evening, 24 hours after a whirlwind day in South Wales. I'm Jamie, and this evening with me I've got Ian Street. Ian, how you doing?
I'm very well. I'm slightly weary, to be honest with you, but I'm all right. Yeah, doing well.
Join the club. Yeah, I think I know why as well. And Ed, the good doctor, Ed Bridges, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm all right.
Yeah, you didn't have quite as long journey home yesterday as we did. So, right. Before we kick off, because we've got a lot to get through this evening, we just wanted to do a little plug and a little thanks to all of our Ko-fi contributors, people who have donated pop money into our sort of, our Ko-fi account to sort of help with the hosting. We are really, really grateful for all of your support. So recent contributors, we've got Mark, Tony, Gav, plus also apparently Carol, who thrust a fiver at Ed during the AGM last week. Extra special thanks also have to go to our Ko-fi regulars who subscribe a set amount each month and every month for us to keep the lights on. So that's Mark Williams, Daniel Hirini, Hamid Baladabadi, Martin Kings, and the Rose Z Exiles WhatsApp group.
Can I just say, Jamie, because I forgot that we gave the Ko-fi a little plug in the last episode, and when I went back to check it whilst doing a little bit of admin during the week, it felt like that scene at the end of It's a Wonderful Life, where George returns home and his house is full of all the people he's helped, and they've all put money in to keep the Building and Loan Society afloat. So it was, it reminded me of that. And anyway, that generosity from everyone really touched us. So yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, we do really appreciate it. Right. A few things have happened since our last podcast. So we'll just quickly run through that and then we'll get to the interesting stuff. We beat Wrexham in a game that saw our biggest attendance of the season so far. And in fact, I went back and checked this, our biggest home league crowd in 41 years, which is incredible. Hugh Jenkins completed his takeover of the club. We signed a striker. The Trust held its AGM. And we played one of the biggest clubs in the world at home in the fourth round of the FA Cup following a last-minute mad dash for tickets. So it's been quite a fortnight. Now, we're going to start off with that game against Manchester United on Sunday, just gone. One of the highlights yesterday was the podcast crew, all five of us, being at the same game for the first time ever, we think. And in particular, sharing a few pints in the Mirringer. So our resident diarist, Ian Street, diligently recorded it all, only to then accidentally delete all the clips with the pub talk. but he did keep his introductory clip and a few of the mid-match clips together. So although it's incomplete, it wouldn't be proper pod episode without hearing from our man on the Northern Beat, Ian Street. Over to you, Ian.
Hello, So welcome to the north. Although obviously heading south today, back to the city of my birth for the big one. It's very early in the morning and I'm at Leeds train station. Never seen it so quiet in my life, waiting for the first train out to get me on my way, praying to the train gods to get me back for the big match today. Plenty of time, so hopefully it all go well. Bit like the shout for the Avengers Assemble. This could be the pods all being in the same place at the same time. Whether we can actually have the organisation ability to actually get in the same pub or whatever, that's another question altogether. But I'm looking forward to trying to catch up with a few of the pod in person, and I'm sure we'll bump into the waves and strays along the way, so the pod could end up being a cast of thousands by the end of the day. So, but that'll be good. Yeah, it's exciting today, isn't it? You know, we've a couple of weeks ago saw us win at Donny, and you know that really felt to me that, you know, it's probably, you know, we can put the relegation stuff behind us. So this really feels like, you know, it is that sort of free hit thing, isn't it? We've got nothing to lose. We could have a right good rattle at them. Hopefully, we don't embarrass ourselves and lose by eight or anything like that. But as we saw yesterday, Maidstone, you know, if you hang on in there, run for your lives, tackle everything that moves. You have some luck on your side, you keep the players a blind net, and you take the one chance that falls your way. Anything can happen. So that's what we want today. Apparently, I've been reading that Rashford's been out on the razzle somewhere, so he might not be playing. Clearly, he was worried about coming to the port. Not sure that, you know, presumably United have been off doing warm weather training. Again, I'm not sure that's the perfect preparation for a cold evening in South Wales, but we shall see, won't we? Obviously, they're pretty tidy up front, aren't they, United? But I think it's their midfield, I think, that is where they're potentially weak. Can we really get about them in midfield, rattle them? I can't see Bruno Fernandes fancying this much today, can you? We'll see. But yeah, I'm going to let the train take the strain, look at the second mortgage I've had to take out to buy this ticket, and contemplate life as a trundle down. Jamie was saying that, am I going to spend the first 45 minutes of this pod wittering on about trains? I could easily do that, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to cross my fingers, hope they all run to time, and we'll catch up back down in the port and see if we can find out what a day it's going to be. Good day to be alive. Well, the first big news, it doesn't look like United are playing in red. Good enough for Wrexham, but it looks like United are playing in some sort of white outfit. Just what we didn't want. Settled quite well, but cut us apart there, United, and Fernandes stuck one in, so a one down, all to play for. Did it against Leeds. Come on. All too easy. Extra pace, time and skill that United have got on the break. You know, cut us to ribbons again. 2-0. Back in it! Out of nothing! Free kick taken, headed out by United, came to Maka, he's hit it on the half volley, it's taken a deflection and gone in! 2-1, come on! So, it's 2-1, half time, staggeringly we're still in that game for a while. It looked like they had more men on the pitch, there was a lot of space, they were playing through our midfield at fun. Quite interesting watching a team who can actually play out from the back, you know, and actually pass the ball to each other. But, you know, we're back in it. I was frustrated by the free kick at the end that we took there. We should have got that right between the keeper and the back four, was what I was thinking. But anyway, Ed, what have you made of it?
Oh, I mean, look, 2-0 down after whatever it was, 12 minutes. That wasn't the plan, was it? But we're still in it. Bryn Morris only scores bangers. Wicked deflection, but they all count. We're going to come out and have a go at them first 10, 15 minutes. Probably if Man United survive that, they're going to go on and win it comfortably. But if they don't, who knows? And Ewan, the boy of Dave Ratidion, made a very, very good point. What was your point that you were just saying?
You said every time we played a Premier League side,
we scored every time.
Newport scored every time we played a Premier League side, so that's not a bad record as well. So, I mean, who knows? Look, it's all up and running. It's all going. I've just called it now. Zanzala is going to come on, having not kicked a ball.
Really?
Having not kicked a ball.
Is he on the bench?
He's on the bench, having not kicked a ball in anger all season. He's gonna suddenly pop up and get something. So yeah.
Unbelievably, I called our goal. I thought Macker hit it, and it was Bryn Morris, wasn't it? I've already called it wrong already. Oh. But me and Jack have both gone 2-2, haven't we, Jack?
Yeah.
Oh, there's still a chance. Yeah. And on the basis of the end of the first half, completely and utterly possible. Which I'm eating my hungover words of a 4-0 drubbing, which I felt confident of after about 5 minutes, I've got to say.
Yeah.
But isn't it nice with all the eyes on us? You know, every we're in front of the media bench. It's absolutely feverish here, just the typing and the pace of coverage that we've got. Isn't it nice? We're Welsh side, and we've got the Welshest name scoring the Welshest goal today. Brindley Morris. You all right?
Yeah.
So, I know I'm happy with proper Welsh representation for proper Welsh football in the English pyramid in the best cup competition in the world, isn't it? So, I don't know. I'm still in the sort of mode of happy to be here, Ian.
Yeah, totally with you.
But
one thing I will say, you know, look at the quality, there is four leagues worth of quality between them. Yeah. The touch of the Man United players, it's that thing you realise. So often we win a header or we get a foot in at a 50-50 and we're playing it into a general area. Man United, they're playing it to a player in a way they can easily control it. And that's the difference. It's just that little extra bit of quality. But isn't it nice to be able to watch it on this pitch at Rodney Parade?
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. 2-2! Start a second half! Would you believe it? Scouse Lewis has gone down the left. He's pinged it in.
I should have put a tenner on it. It probably would have got me a grand.
Well, 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 well. Game on! In all the excitement there of Adam Lewis getting the ball in, I just couldn't work out a score, but the milkman has delivered. Will Evans, again, incredible. Ball's hit the post from Luke Shaw, I think. It's come back and Anthony's tapped it into the empty net. Really frustrating. Still, 3-2, still a chance. Can we get into it again? Right to the end in injury time. United got a fourth, unfortunately. Excellent effort, though. You can't argue. We've got two against them. We've pulled it back to 2-2. We're going to lose the game, but you can't fault us for effort in that game, and we created some good chances and put them under some pressure at times. So, you know, really excellent performance. Right, Swindon next week. Let's sort them out, climb up the table.
Oh, hearing Ian's clips kind of brings it all back. What a day that was. I mean, the limbs, as I believe the young people call it, for our second goal were fantastic. You know, there were people in the back of the Hazels all grabbing each other and jumping around, and you know, my eldest and his mate were jumping about, and I was grabbing Jack and some bloke next to him. You know, it's just that pandemonium of when a really important goal goes in and everyone's bouncing. That was a wonderful moment. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I did really enjoy seeing all the blokes on the scaffolding on Rodney Road. Watching the game, I thought that's exactly what the FA Cup should be about. That was lovely. And it was lovely to see all of you good folk in the pub beforehand. The thing that probably will really stick with me, though, is just the way that the city centre in Newport came alive yesterday. I saw owner of the Dragons, David Buttress, tweeting about this. You know, games like that, what they can do for a city in terms of putting money in the coffers of, you know, particularly hospitality businesses that really need it at this time of year. You know, you shouldn't underestimate it. The benefit that yesterday's game will have given to not just businesses, but like proper local businesses, your Murringers, your Tiny Rebels, your Le Pubs. You know, if Newport played in a soulless plastic bowl in a retail park, then you don't get that in the same way. And even if you do have a lot of people there, the businesses who benefit from it tend to be kind of big corporations. So I really like the fact that there were loads of people in town. They were spending money in places that have their roots in Newport. The Murringer, it was like being at a family wedding. You know, I saw all of you lot together properly for the first time. That was nice. Bumped into couple of listeners, a couple of people who I know or half know. And, you know, that's what it should be like. So the joy of that, the joy of being in my favourite pub in Wales and bumping into lots of lovely people and just everyone being in a good mood, everyone being up for the game, that will stay with me for a long time. That will see me through some drizzly away defeats in northern towns. So, yeah, that was it for me.
Does that resonate for you as well, Ian? Obviously, travelling from, you know, a drizzly northern towns. What was your feeling of that?
I did come from a drizzly northern town. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And particularly that, was it 2 weeks ago, my last away day, it wasn't drizzly, but it was a very cold northern town at Doncaster. You know, I like Doncaster as a club and all the rest of it, but that, it, you know, and they've got a nice ground, you know, as soulless bowls in a, on retail parks go. But the difference between being able to be in the city centre and trying to either have to have a, you know, 45-minute walk from a train station or drive and park in a big car, you know, it's different. It's different gravy, isn't it? Where you can just get the train, you know, it's literally 10 minutes walk away, you know, which was after 9 minutes injury time went up and I had to get back to the train at 7:01. I was thinking, oh, my God. But no, it was great. It was absolutely brilliant. I was slightly tired because I had to stand all the way from Birmingham to Newport because the train was so rammed full of Man United fans. And I had to stand all the way back to Birmingham as well because it was so rammed. So it was good. I had a really good chat with a lot of the United fans on the way down and on the way up. Some good people I was chatting to. So including some who going all the way back out further north than me, a guy going to Ashington in Newcastle and a guy going up to just near Morpeth. So I was chatting to them. So that was, I think I was doing a fair leg, but that was pretty impressive from them as well. So, yeah, had lots of good chats all day. And as Ed said, both in the pub and around, but also travelling down as well. And, it was really good. It was one of those days where, as you say, it makes up for, you know, some of the stuff which isn't so great. And that's why we go, isn't it? We don't have the glamour fixtures every week. So when you get them, they mean more, I think.
And, you know, we've said all of that without really touching on the match itself, where we went toe-to-toe with one of the biggest teams in the world. And for 15 minutes plus in the second half, at 2-2, we were thinking, we look favourite to go on and win this. So, I mean, what a day.
I've got a question about that, because one of the things I think was one of the things that was amazing about it is when we were going toe-to-toe, that bit where they looked a bit rattled and we were thinking, goodness gracious me, what's going to happen here? I think what was interesting for me is that we actually tried to win that game at that point. We were trying to go, we could think we can win this. Now, I think that's brilliant and I'm all for that because, you know, I'm a romantic, go for it, right? But I can't help in reflection think, should we at 2-2 have just gone, right, get all the defenders on, hoof into the stands, play for a replay, get some more money, let's all go to Old Trafford. Do you know what I mean? In hindsight, should we have done that?
I was not thinking that at all during the game. And I've not even considered that until you've just said that now. No chance. But 20 minutes, we had them absolutely rattled. I was telling everyone around me, I was on the North Terrace, I was telling everyone around me, yeah, we've got them here. We've got them here, lads. And yeah, they did. They looked a bit like, I don't know. And I found that interesting because one of the points I actually put on here talking about the actual game, it's interesting how we set up and played that slightly differently to the other big games, you know, your Tottenham's, your Man City's and stuff. We didn't really ever sit back, I don't think. Yeah, Man United had a lot of the ball early doors and, you know, they started, yeah, very well, made it look easy at times, but I don't think we ever really sort of played that sort of sitting back. And I think that was maybe a tactical, you know, it was definitely a move from Coughlin not to do that and to maybe sort of surprise them a bit and go for it.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And I think that's in keeping with how Coco has approached things this season. You know, you saw it when we played Stockport, for example. They turned up expecting us to just meekly try and grind out a result. But actually, sometimes you have got to take the game to them. And look, Man United are going to expect to dominate possession. The question is, in the whatever it is, 20, 25% of the time when we've got the ball, what do we try and do with it? Coco's principle has always been possession with a purpose. And that's what it was yesterday. You know, when we win the ball, we break forward quickly and we try and do something with it. It's served him pretty well up until this point. And I do think, having hauled our way back into it from 2-0 down, it would be madness to change your game plan at that point. I think, you know, once you've fought your way back into it and you're on the up, you just have to kind of stick with what you're doing and hope that momentum does the rest.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we should have parked the bus at that point, but it was something I was reflecting on, you know, afterwards, you know, having that tactical flexibility to say, well, actually, do you know what, we could do something a bit different here. But I also think that the game changed for me almost after we went 2-0 down, because I think we were almost like they were a very good side, obviously. Do you know what I mean? We talked about Man United and, you know, we talked to the game, Ed, where, didn't we, where they were, you know, we were putting in areas, they were passing it to actual people, you know. And in the opening stages, I think we maybe were a bit too respectful and stood off. But when we started getting into them and rattling them a little bit and actually pressing like we do in normal games and saying, well, they're just players, let's go and press them, let's try and actually harry them a little bit, that's when it changed for me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel the same thing. Now, while you guys were chatting, a wild Jack appeared on our Zoom screen. Jack, how are you doing this evening?
Okay. I've just kicked in on what Ian said about the flow of the game. Now, on the first goal for us, I think, it wasn't a little bit of a surprise, but it was outside the box. It wasn't a hopeful shot. I know he's got skill, but I think the vibe was, especially after the second goal went in, that, I mean, listening to myself talk in the stands was very much, we're happy to be here. What a wonderful occasion. At least this happened. And wow, I got to see Ten Hag, you know, the back of his bald head. You know, that was wonderful. But the goal changed a little bit for me. I still didn't think so much. And then Will Evans' goal was like, I think the feeling for me then was, yes, we can disrupt them. They haven't got that bounce back ability. That was, for me, that was the flow of the game. I don't know how you felt throughout. It was an emotional roller coaster, and I never expected that, because something that Flinney had in the cup run was bounce back ability, that made up word from Soccer Saturday. If I'd ever try and get friends over to watch Newport when it was difficult, is I would always sell Newport as a team that no matter when they went down 1-0, 2-0, they'd always give it a good go. And I'm not sure that's entirely a Graham Coughlan team asset yet. It sure as is now, but I'm happy to be proven wrong on that one.
Yeah, I actually agree with you there. I think one of the other things I made my notes for tonight was, I thought there was so much running. I mean, not just Will Evans, who just doesn't stop running anyway, the whole 90 minutes, but the whole team. I was expecting, we're going to get a bit knackered here. And that's where like the third and the fourth goal would come from. But I don't think, I wouldn't say that was, the reason why we conceded those third and fourth goals. I think it's just Premier League quality told in the end. You know, they always had someone on the overlap or happened to be free at the back post. It was just the goal in class. But we never stopped. And I think, I don't know whether that's just something, Coughlan's done to sort of improve the squad's fitness levels, or maybe it was just the atmosphere and, the sheer adrenaline pumping through those players' veins, that they were just, were not going to give up. But I feel like, yesterday you mentioned that about, a Coughlan team not quite having that same kind of vibe or whatever you want to call it as a Flinney team or, a Newport team of the past. But I think yesterday kind of maybe proved to us and proved to the players as well that, they do have that. They do have that gut and guile to sort of keep on going.
On the running side, I mean, we are a fit side, and I would say that certainly when I watch us away, when we don't have as that much of the ball, they run hard. They do. It is a team that works hard, to be fair. And but it was funny on the train back up, I was chatting to these United fans, and they were saying, obviously second half, one was saying, I was expecting to be seeing a lot of the ball, and he said, it's down your end all the time. So it was like, I was getting really, he said he was getting frustrated, and he said, they it was a cracking cup tie, and he said, all credit to us, he said, they were a bit surprised, but they said, it was a good game, and they said we wouldn't have minded coming back to Old Trafford either. Do you know what I mean? It's, they said you deserved something out of that game in terms of, I don't think they were just being polite. I think they were generally quite impressed by the effort and everything that we put in.
Yeah. I mean, look, I wouldn't necessarily say we deserve something out of that. I think, the two early goals, I was fearing a cricket score. And then the two goals at the end, I thought, yeah, fair enough. But yeah, that middle of the match where we all believed, that was phenomenal. And there are a lot of fans, full house, all believing, including apparently Mickey Dimitriou, who is apparently in the Hazel Terrace. I don't know how he must have an in with tickets. He needs to give Nathan Wood some ideas and some pointers on queuing for tickets, doesn't he? But it's good to see former pros coming back coming to enjoy the atmosphere. I wonder what it's like though for them, because obviously he'll have played in a lot of those big games, to see what it's like from the side of the pitch as well. It must be quite fun for him.
Those are discussions had with Ian on a train for fans are not shy of saying what they really feel. And the disappointing thing for me is, I don't know if you've talked about this already, I apologise if you have, what is with Erik ten Hag's completely classless commentary post-game? We didn't have that off Pep. How can he possibly say we had good chances and they had nothing, really nothing, and out of nothing, they score a goal? I'm sorry, mate. I mean, I was with you, Ed, at the back, and I was looking at the back of his bald head, and I said, "This is him gone. That is not a good performance. That is, I know, we lost 4-2. The optics of that are great for United. Watching that game, it was awful, terrible. Can't manage his best striker to even turn up. Can't get his £100 million players to turn up against a League Two side enough to really stop us from scoring, and the goals that we scored weren't by accident. They were wonderfully played, and the defence for the Will Evans goal, awful, absolutely terrible. And the classless comment. And let's not forget, I mean, I think we've lost some of the Merenger footage. I'm a recovering United fan. I've got no bones about saying that, and I'm not going to be a hypocrite. Everyone in Newport has a Premier League side. I'm sorry, it's a fact, right? Most people that support Newport have a second club, and I can't defend. It hurts me to say that the guy who manages City has more class than this guy. I took it personally, obviously by the same way. I really did. Trash.
You see, I read it differently because so there were two things that were prominent in terms of what Ten Hag said post match. One was the fact that he gave a very nice bottle of wine to Coco, which we might well come on to. Which
I'd like to talk about gesture. That bottle of wine.
Yeah, we'll come on to that in a second. And then the other thing was the comments about we offered nothing and blah, blah, blah. I think he probably regrets the choice of words, because I don't think that was quite what he was trying to say. I think he was saying that, Man United really should have been able to deal with what we were doing. The passages of play that led to the two goals, there was nothing in there that should not be bread and butter to a Premier League defender. And I think that was probably what he meant. But I don't want to put words in the guy's mouth, but I think that was the point he was making, is Man United were 2-0 up, comfortable, and then through their own lack of paying attention, they led in two goals against an opposition who they comfortably should have been able to deal with. That was how I read it. And I think it was just a poor choice of words rather than him trying to disrespect us. Because I don't see what percentage there is for him in doing that. But maybe I'm being too charitable.
You're shaking your head there.
Let's talk about the wine.
Let's talk about the wine. Tell us about the wine, Ian.
Table my anger. Let's go for the wine.
So, apparently he gave... I don't know what bottle of wine it is. I'd be very interested to know. But apparently he gave a very nice bottle of wine to Coco, didn't he, after the game, which is a really nice gesture. And then Coco said, brilliant, but I don't drink wine. And then I think... an American beer company has contacted him and said, don't worry, Graham, we've got you covered. We'll sort you out some beers. The question for me is, what's happening with the bottle of wine? Now, I feel that the 1912 Exiles has done a brilliant job this week promoting the club. And as an elder statesman within this podcast, who really enjoys a glass of red wine with some cheese. So if Cockler would like to donate the bottle of red wine to the 1912 Exiles, I will make sure it gets put to good use.
It's a £230 bottle of 2013 Antidori di Nonello.
Bless you.
There you go.
I've stuck with the cold. That was it, Newportonian. Antidori di Nonello.
I thought the worst thing of all of that was that Ten Hag was like, oh yeah, yeah, here's a nice bottle of red wine. I know it's nice, it's recommended by Sir Alex. It's like just let him retire. He's always having to be wheeled out. Like, choose your own wine. Come on. Like, it's ridiculous. The other thing I want to point out from the game, which I heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but I just saw it on social media. But two people in the away end, because obviously they've got a lot of season ticket holders, probably a lot of people who go to away matches. We didn't have a huge allocation for them in comparison, obviously huge for most away fans who come here. But two people allegedly bought tickets maybe through reselling for 600 quid a pop. Now, I reckon that must be a world record for a Newport County ticket being sold, surely. No?
It was interesting because I was, again, chatting to the United fans on the way down and on the way back in terms of what was it like in terms of getting a ticket allocations and how is it working? And it was quite a bit unusual because they had to physically turn up with their ID and all the rest of it to get their tickets down in Newport, didn't they? They had to go to the Uni of Wales building. As a result of that, one of the guys was saying, it was a bit like Cocoon. It was all the older United fans who've been going for a very long time, who've got the points in the thing, who could make sure they could travel, get down there, wanted to go, new ground, all that sort of stuff. That, so it was all the ones who go to the European games and all that sort of stuff, the long-standing fans. It wasn't the young uns who because they wouldn't be able to do it. And there was much less reselling as a result of that. So, we don't know how those people got their tickets.
What I will say, though, Ian, isn't there? Is that if those people who spent 600 quid each on a ticket, if they want to borrow my season ticket for the Gillingham game, I will let them have it for 300 quid. And then they'll get to watch County for half of what they spent to watch us yesterday. So that's a bargain.
There you go. There you go. Good deal.
One of my last questions before we move on from the Manchester United game. Will Evans, can we hold on to him? This might be very outdated by the end of this week. Obviously recording a few days before the transfer window shuts, but can we hang on to him? Because he really put himself in the shop window yesterday. I had a lot of people watching on TV texting me saying that Will Evans is some player. So what do we think?
There's rumours of bids, isn't there?
There are rumours of bids. I think that he... How many days have we got to the window shut? Two? So it's tight, isn't it, in terms of, things can happen on the last days. He's done himself no harm. His contract runs out at the end of the season. So take the money and sell him. I think that's, if a decent bid comes in, I think we have no option but to sell him. I'm not saying that's what I want to happen. I'm saying I think that if bids are coming in that are decent, I think that's what we should do. We don't sell players very often. We certainly don't sell players very often for possibly some decent money. If we're saying that we are likely to be staying in this division this year, then with the money we've made from this, and if we could sell Evans and probably Maka, who I heard there's rumours about, then you could bring in another few hundred thousand pounds potentially. We've got a little bit of a, I don't want to use the word war chest, but it does certainly allow Coughlin and Jenks to plan recruitment for next season, doesn't it? And start us building. And then it also gives us the opportunity again, this sort of scouting and progression out of the Welsh leagues, it puts us in a good place for that.
I think we're going to find out about the personality of the owner, aren't we? We're going to find out what Hugh's personality is. And so if he sells, I'm not saying that much in the way that, Daniel Levy will not sell a player unless he's it's 200% over the value. Are we going to figure out with Hugh, is he going to be shrewd and make a good deal because that's what's good for the future of the club? Or is he going to hold on because, there's going to be a gang of Newport supporters of whom the position in the league is never going to satisfy them and they need all the investment, keep all the best players. Podge is still banging in 30 and we've still got Washington and all of, we've still got Regan Poole, we've never sell them, we've got a Premier League side. That's obviously ridiculous, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with Will, because if you're ever going to capitalise on a sale, You just put him in the biggest shop window, and the boy did very, very, very good. So it's almost like name your prize for a lot of desperate clubs out there who need Will Evans to go and milk some goals from.
I'm going to give you one fact and two cliches, both of which happen to be true. The fact is that the window closes at the end of the day on Thursday, which is the 1st of February. So we've got an extra 24 hours over what we had assumed. So that's some bad news. Two cliches that happen to be true. The first one is that the only thing worse than other players trying to poach your players is no one wanting any of your players because they're crap. So I'm not too worried about the fact that we're in a good position where other teams want to buy our players. That is a measure of success. And the second point is we may well decide that we want to keep our best players and that we'll turn down all bids, but it is very, very hard to keep and get the best out of a player who doesn't want to be there. And so if Evans, McLaughlin, you know, whoever else decide they've done their bit with Newport County, but actually they want to challenge themselves at a higher level, then realistically they're going to go. No matter how much we might wish that they had the same affinity to the club that we have, ultimately, if they decide that's what they want for their career and for, you know, their well-being and their financial well-being, then, you know, that's fine. So we are a fourth division club. We're a selling club. And as long as we get a price that that the club feel they can then reinvest into finding replacements, then that's how it is. So I'm fairly sanguine about it.
Yeah, I also think, Ed, that you said a really good point there, that, you know, if they want to go up to, you know, bigger and better things, higher clubs, I think that for me is the key. So when Priestley last season went on, you swanned off to Walsall, I'm like, well, you know. So I think for me, it's about that. If a League One or a Championship club comes in for either of those players or anybody else, fair play. If they're going to go to Walsall, I'm not as happy with that. Or Swindon, dare I say.
Wrexham. You know?
Well, they don't know.
And you imagine.
They're shopping in other windows, aren't they? I'm not.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I do genuinely think, you know, like I think you said, you know, he's been on primetime BBC One this week and he performed incredibly well. His stock, that could be the highest, you know, possible value we're going to get right at this. It's the ideal week to sort of put him in that shop window, particularly if we think, yeah, he's probably going to be gone for free in the summer. You're going to have to take, what, 300 grand or more, or I don't know how much we're wanting for him, but, you know, you want to take some significant money. Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Maybe that's why, you know, Jeffcott's come in as sort of the inevitable replacement.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah. While we're on that, before we go to Wrexham, let's speak about Jeffcott. Obviously, we know there might be some potential departures, but obviously, what do we make of this new signing? Aside from maybe replacing Will Evans?
Well, I did a bit of digging the morning we signed him, got some views from some Plymouth fans and some Swindon fans. I also got some views from a few fans. Is it St Johnstone that he's just come from? I've lost track a little bit. Yeah, so the St Johnstone fans weren't particularly polite about him, but the reviews from Plymouth and Swindon fans were overwhelmingly positive. I think there are a few questions about his kind of fitness and stamina, but if there's one thing we know about Coco is that he makes his players get fit and do a lot of running, so I should imagine that if that is a problem, it won't be a problem for very long. Fox in the box, big, strong, you know, he can make a good run, and he's that kind of classic play between the posts, kind of old-fashioned number nine, it seems to me. So you know, in that kind of Will Evans mould, dare I say it. The question mark for me, well, there's two. One is whether he can do the high energy, high press stuff that Coco wants. That may take a little while to come. And the other thing is, I think we need to just give him a little bit of time. He's not played much football this season. He's not going to suddenly come into the team and bang the goals in left, right and centre. It's probably going to take him a month to get up to match sharpness. But that aside, he looks like a good signing. And the Swindon fan I asked, the first thing they said was they couldn't believe that he was signing for a club at our level. So, you know, that's a good sign that, you know, he should have some quality to him.
I think it's a shrewd acquisition, and I was astonished because I feel he's been around for a long time. He's only literally just turned 24, hasn't he? So I was genuinely surprised by that. He's been well under 21 national, hasn't he, and all that sort of side of things. I think pace will potentially be the issue, depending on how we... But I think if we get the balls into him, I think he can score goals, and he's proven that, and he's scored 26 goals in League One, hasn't he? So, you know, I think if we get the service right, getting fit and firing, I think it's a shrewd acquisition. And is it, you know, it might be for this season, but is this the start of the build for next?
Yeah, quite possibly. Because I was going to actually ask you all, you know, what else we might need to strengthen, or is it, you know, places we might need to sort of replace players that might be on the move out? But where are we likely to be looking in the next like three days, 72 hours?
I want an all action midfielder. I think if Macca goes, we've still got Payne, haven't we? And we now got Lewis's back, so we can cover the wing back positions. So if we were gonna bring anybody in or had any money to spend from the United game, I want a bit of. I still think our midfield, as much as we do the pressing, as much as it's got some qualities in there, I'd have an all-action midfielder, and I'd potentially have another centre-back.
So I would also want... I want to see the creative midfielder who's going to be the heart of the side for the next 2 years, because I don't think we know who that is. I don't think it's going to be Will Digg, because, you know, he's struggled to kind of hold down a place. Waite and Wood, I think, are both, you know, good options off the bench, but I don't think they're starters. So I want to see who we signing, who's going to be the marquee, you know, creating stuff from midfield, pinging the balls around, playing the through balls. That's the player I think we most need. I would also like another striker, even if we keep hold of all the ones we've got. I just feel like Rye isn't quite there yet. Zanzala, you know, we may see him pull on a shirt again, but I don't think he's a long-term option. I would like to see another striker as well.
Jack, is there anywhere you think we might need to strengthen, or you think that's where Cocker's looking?
I was just thinking for myself, sat there, what would I fancy? Which is a really dangerous question, isn't it? And I was thinking, God, I miss Kevin Ellison, because wouldn't that have been fun in the last 10 minutes of the United game? Just to shove Kev on, big Kev on, just to wind everyone up. And I want the next Mr. Newport County, which is a bit too... Ed's point. I think I'm pretty aligned there. I want a new favourite house, one who just plays off the ref for 90 minutes. We're missing that, I think. I'm really happy with the Jeffcott one, actually, because if this has done anything, this has forced me to read Wikipedia. And if you didn't know, listeners, he won EFL League 2 Player of the Month and Young Player of the Month in January 2020. He scored 5 goals in 4 starts, and that was the year that Plymouth won promotion to League 1. So he's got proper credo, this kid. And do they know that they're going to lose Will Evans? Are they just playing hokum with the bids and getting some more money? Maybe it'll be obvious come Thursday.
Yeah, I think I have a feeling that a lot of this will become very outdated and obviously podcasts record very quickly. I just have a feeling, yeah, I agree with yourselves about getting, you know, that box to box midfielder or that, you know, Mr. Newport County. I don't think we're getting that in the last 3 days of the January transfer window. I think that's more of a let's find somebody over the summer. Although no, we have found some, you know, gems in January. I think Charsley came in January, didn't he? So yeah, I don't know. Who knows? But let's leave all the speculating for now. And we'll come back next week and discuss who we actually did sign and sell. We do need to touch on the Wrexham game before we go. Now, it feels like an age ago because so much has happened in the last week. But we beat Wrexham at Rodney Parade. And we had, you know, 9,500 there. We had the biggest crowd since that Cardiff game in 1983 that I think Ian's referenced in the past, referenced in the preview pod for Manchester United. Now, Ed, I'm going to come to you because obviously they had a red card in the first half. But by all accounts, it might not have been that critical moment in us winning the game. I think we were playing superbly well up until that point.
Yeah, we started probably the best kind of opening 10 minutes that I've seen from us all season. We really came out the traps firing well, strung some good passes together. Yeah, the red card was a bonus, and you know it was massively important for the game, and it probably really did make a big difference, I think, particularly as the game went on. But we looked very good in that game, even before the sending off, and I thought it was a great performance. The way we dug in and held on as well. You know, I know when you're leading against 10 men, that's kind of the least you should do, but they had a lot of quality, and we were a match to it. And I thought it was a really great day. You know, Man United will be probably the one that we'll remember for far longer. But you know, there were 500 more people in against Wrexham, and the atmosphere was superb. I thoroughly enjoyed that game. That was a really nice win, and a little bit like Stockport, you know, a few months ago. It's one of those that you go out, you come out the ground afterwards and you go, we're okay. You know, this is a side that has done so well to kind of pull themselves out of what I think was going to be a very, very difficult season towards the foot of the table. And I think when we finished that game, we were in 14th place. We might have dropped a little bit because we didn't play at the weekend. But, you know, that's kind of the base level, I think, of where we need to be at this point.
Absolutely. Let's not tell Wrexham fans that there were 500 more people for their game than the Man United game, because it goes to their heads. Because but what do we make though? I mean, do we care about bragging rights? So it's a bit, but you know, friendly beef and banter on Twitter and stuff. But like, I think everyone on this pod doesn't think it's not really a derby. That's just a bit of added spice, really, from what was it, 11 years ago when we. When we beat them to promotion, and they've only just decided to come and join us.
Do you know what it is, Jane? It's complete and utter cringe. The whole thing is cringe. The whole Wrexham thing is cringe. The whole Wrexham coming up to this league with that money is cringe. The whole thing. Now, I'm going to dial it back so I don't feel that people might misinterpret that I spend too long on this. I didn't watch the game because I just divested from it because I could feel my blood boiling now, and I got to dial myself back. But it's completely and utterly cringe. They're not on our level. They were never on our level, and it took American money to do it. And if they're not prepared to have that thrust upon them, thrown in their face, left, right, and centre, and if they can't take it, they're a hypocrite. And it just absolutely winds me up. There is 1% that I wish we had a bigger buyer than Hugh Jenkins, but I'll take the higher ground and say that Hugh Jenkins was a Welsh legend for Welsh football, and he's going to do great things for us, not this American import. Thank you very much. Yeah,
I'm not angry at all, because it doesn't bother me in the slightest. It's a literal non-entity for me. It just doesn't, you know, they're going to go up with their millions. we beat them the last time we played them. Whatever's.
I wish I had that shill. I wish I had that. I just
thing
can't.
The thing is, they're not the first team to spend some money and then do a double promotion. They won't be the last, and it's fine. You know, we'll just deal with it. That's my feeling towards it all.
It's the indignant and dull tone that they have on Twitter, though. It's this really bothersome fly that buzzes around Twitter, and it's the Wrexham fans constantly buzzing around Twitter as this illuminated source of Welsh happiness. No, you're not. It's a complete fabrication. Complete fabrication. I'm hungover, man. A good sleep.
Well, what you need to do, you need to read more books and spend less time on social media.
That's correct. Yeah, I hear it does wonders for mental health. But yeah, that's where we live.
Before we move on to the AGM chat, I just want to ask everyone, because we kind of touched upon it, you know, on the transfer bit and the Manchester United bit, but you know, we're not going down. What does the rest of the season look like? I think Reese, who's not on the pod tonight, but Reese did pull together previous like results after we had these cup runs, after we made the fourth round against Tottenham and the fifth round against Man City, and he was like, "Yeah, we just like fall off a cliff our form." What's the feeling right now? We've got obviously a big game, lunchtime kickoff at home to Swindon next Saturday. What's the get? You know, we've got 18 games left this season. What's the potential? What's par? What's possible?
Well, at the risk of repeating what I said last season, once we got into safety, I think we should try and leapfrog AFC Wimbledon, because I was watching with interest their form and their transfer dealing. So they've lost Ali Al-Hamadi, I think his name is, who's gone off to Ipswich. So they're just outside the playoffs, but their momentum isn't great. They're kind of sliding down and they've just lost their key striker. I'm sure they'll bring someone else in, but... I would like to see us leapfrog them. We've still got to go and play at their place. And I think the gap at the moment is about 5 points. So if I was going to try and set a target, I would say let's see if we can overhaul them. Because if we overhaul them, we're probably going to end up top half somewhere. And I think that would be a very nice return. And it would also suggest that we've laid good groundwork for next season. So finish higher than AFC Wimbledon.
You don't think you said that the gap is 5 points. You get another 2 points. That's a playoff spot right now. We're only 7 off the playoffs. Have some ambition, well, Ed. Come on. Ian, what are you thinking?
I think that, I mean, it'd be brilliant if we could beat the roundabout crowd, wouldn't it, next week? I think that'll be probably quite a tough game, actually. You know, there's going to be a bit of, I'm going to have a bit of a sort of, you know, come down after the United game, the Wrexham game, and all the hullabaloo that's been going on. So I'd be interested to see that, see the intensity that we've got in that game. And then we've got some of the tricky ones coming up, haven't we? We've got Notts County, and we've got a little bit of a tricky run, I think, ahead of us. So, you know, I am positive about what we're doing and where we're going to go, but I think finishing above Wimbledon will be a likely ambition. I think that might be a bit of a tall order. They're probably going to spend their 1.7 million, aren't they? They got in on somebody else. So, I think I might have been floating around saying at the start of the season, wouldn't it be great if we could finish 11th? So I'm going to stick with that. Let's go for 11th.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think it will be a tricky game on Saturday, to be honest. But I think we'll be up for it. I've just got, I think that the momentum, the bounce, I feel like the feel-good factor in the city, I think that's what's really sort of pushing things right now. Jack, what's possible for this Newport County team, the last 18 games of the season?
For me, I don't think that should matter. It's difficult to say. I know what I want, but we've had great tumult at this club in terms of ownership and management. Cockle's had a little while, but I still think it's too soon to bestow a great expectation upon him. I think a good marker for me would be Walsall away. And if I can just indulge everyone in the record against Walsall, blimey, you know, let's count back to 2017, right? Draw, win, 1-0 away. Excellent. Draw, loss, draw, loss. So if I just take the litmus test as Walsall away, we do well, then I expect great things for the rest of the season. If we do terribly, then fine. But I'm not going to be invested in the finishers. I think we're safe. I'm happy we're safe. It's good we're safe. We have Hugh Jenkins. We have a little bit of a transfer window. The first signing is an absolute brilliant on paper. You cannot blame that signing whatsoever. If he makes any more, that's an absolute bonus. And then we'll start next year, next season, with proper expectations where I would like playoffs again. Because that's where we were touching before. That's where we were before. We have failed the playoffs. Let's, as Cody Rhodes is going to do at WrestleMania for you nerds like me that still like professional wrestling, you've got to finish the story. Let's finish the story. That's my long-term expectation for this season. Let's enjoy it. We've enjoyed it already. Like, that United game is the absolute maximum that we could have done in terms of securing money for whatever we need to pay off, or if we've got any sort of debt. I don't know. I don't go to AGMs. It's the best fixture we could have had for attracting potential new fans. You know, I I remember a long time ago when I went to the FA Cup and we played Blackpool, and it was the best day out ever. I think I was like 9 years old, and it set me for life. It turned me off United from the 90s, which was difficult, and I was into grassroots football. And I wonder and I hope that that was the same for a lot of kids that came to see us, despite noticing a lot of disgruntled parents just doing the old bring the tablet brigade and just stuff it in their hands, and they just wash the tablet for 90 minutes. But, you know, there's not a single person in that stadium or a single person who watched that who was from Newport who didn't jump up and clap and be proud for the city that they live in or came from when that second goal went in. I was almost crying. So, yeah, that is the absolute longest answer for expectations this season. I have none. Yeah, I don't care. I don't. I really don't.
So, so Jack thinks mid-table.
Yeah.
We went on quite a journey there, didn't we? I had about three or four questions I was going to ask you. I've already forgotten them because it sounded like you had a good day, Jack. So that's the main thing.
I've only just recovered. Yeah.
You did actually segue us nicely onto the AGM. You mentioned the AGM because slap bang in the middle of our two biggest games of the season. And on the day we also announced a new striker and, you know, the Jenkins takeover was completed. Also had the AGM. It was a lot going on, AGM and the Supporters Trust. So it didn't get as much sort of pickup and coverage as it might have otherwise done, particularly in a season such as this. But Ed, you were there to keep an eye on business. So resolutions to the AGM statements of accounts might not be the most scintillating thing. So he tasked Ed with summarising the whole meeting in less than 5 minutes. Ed, your time starts now.
Newport County Supporters Trust AGM on the 25th of January in as short a space of time as I can possibly manage. Here is what happened. So first of all, we had an introduction and an overview from Paul Marks talking about where the Trust membership had stood during the period under report. So the AGM reported on 2 years worth of business, 2021-22 and 2022-23. We started that period, 2021, with 979 trust members. That went up to 1,089 and then fell back to 992 at the end of the reporting period. Although we did hear later on that since that period, the trust membership had risen up to 1,214 members at the 9th of January, partly because of people joining to take part in the Hugh Jenkins vote and to get tickets for the Man United game. So that trajectory has been upwards, but I should imagine will tail off. So that was the first thing. Financially, there was a report that during that two-year period, donations had remained fairly steady from the trust to the club, but also obviously with that income coming from trust members, so from trust members to trust and from trust to club, of around 100k a year to help sustain the club. Again, there is an expectation that some of that donation level will continue going forwards with Hugh Jenkins' takeover confirmed, although we'll obviously see how that goes. Then we had the formal kind of business of the meeting resolution. So the meeting approved the accounts and statements for 2021-22 and 2022-23. Interesting, there were no questions about the appointment of auditors, given that those same auditors had signed off on the accounts in which we found the black hole, which gave rise to last May's big meeting that we talked about in length at the time. There was then a members' resolution that was proposed by Chris Davis for the Trust to adopt a transparency policy. Chris explained that it would leave flexibility for the Trust board and members to develop that policy in a way that they felt was workable, balancing the considerations between the need for commercial confidentiality with the need to tell Trust members what is going on. All it would have done is bind them to develop and bring forward a proposal by the end of July. I was quite surprised that there were people who spoke against that, feeling that it didn't strike that correct balance around confidentiality. But in the end, it was passed narrowly, 40 votes to 30. There was a bit of discussion about whether or not that resolution needed a two-thirds majority, but in the end, the current trust directors accepted that. So we will wait to see what happens with that. And then the final bit of the formal part of the meeting was the current state of play of the trust. As I say, 1,200 odd members. £73,000 in donations received so far this financial year, just short of 13 grand in the bank, and £66,000 donated to the club so far this period. So that's the state of play as things are now. That concluded the formal AGM business. We then moved into what was termed an informal meeting to discuss the future of the trust and elections. There is a plan to do a survey of all trust members ahead of a formal further meeting around April time to agree next steps. And that survey will, that meeting will look at things like adopting a new model constitution as recommended by Supporters Direct, resetting the trust's objectives and priorities, electing trust and club directors. It was confirmed that there will be two seats on the club board, and those will be elected directly from the members rather than being voted on by whoever gets elected on the trust board. So in theory, someone could stand for the club board without standing for the trust board, although it'd be interesting to see whether anyone seeks to do that. That meeting in April will also talk about fundraising plans, communications, recruiting and retaining trust members, and reviewing trust memberships. There was also confirmation that the trust will retain its 27% shareholding in the club. There are a few questions and suggestions that came up at that point about how the trust might build a fighting fund so it's match fit and ready for the future, should it be in a position where it needs to take back ownership. Amber Arnie talked about the need for the trust to focus on the future, you know, making sure that things like the academy are protected, and there was a lot of supportive nodding around that point. There was also a question about aligning the trust database and ticketing database to address the problems we've had in the last week, and it sounds as though a lesson has been learned and that might be done. So in less than 5 minutes, I reckon that pretty much concludes the business of the NCAFC Trust Notes, Trust AGM, 25th of January 2024.
Okay, perfect timing, and no huge surprises there. Although, do we think that retaining 1,200 trust members now, the change of ownership has been confirmed, is a realistic aim? Ian, I'll come to you.
I'd like to think a realistic aim is to increase the trust membership. But, you know, I think that's going to be tough, because I think that as existing trust members or as new trust members, I think we need to be clear about what is the trust for, what's it about, what's its role, and what's it going to do as a minority stakeholder in the club, and what's the relationship with a new owner going to be, if any. And thinking, Jack gave an answer there about long-term ambitions. I mean, Jenks is 71, isn't he, right? So he's not going to be around forever. One of the roles for the trust could be to get ourselves in a position where we could, take the club back potentially, down the line if Jenks is going to, pass it back to the club or whatever, But at the minute, I think we need to just, have a bit of clear thought about getting the right skills in there, getting the structure of that right. Will people want the stand to get on the committee, all of that side of things, which we've been sort of let down with in the past. And doing some simple things, like one of the things that was talked about, because the ticket interest thing was tricky for this United game, putting that online alongside the season ticket holders. So if you're a trust member, you can just get your tickets online, which you can't do currently, and all that sort of stuff. So there could be some ways of making it not quite a member. Lots of clubs have like membership schemes, don't they? Could our trust almost work in that way? So you can, bring people in, contribute to the trust, contribute to the club. I'm not sure. I think the jury's out for me how it's going to go, but I'm sticking around for a bit and I'll see what happens with it.
For me, it's difficult. I love the idea, but it needs motivated and time-rich people. Next time this happens, because Hugh won't be here forever, that it's not him selling to American owners that we're going to really get annoyed with, right? Not the Ryan Reynolds. I'm sure there's plenty in Newport that wouldn't love Ryan Reynolds, and they all love Marvel, and that's fantastic. The Jerry Sherman-esque lot. We don't want that.
That was more or less verbatim what I said at the meeting, Jack, and yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Jack, you've kind of swayed me on, you say it was a rant, but you've swayed me on the reasons for keeping a trust going, because I'll be honest with you, I was struggling to see what value a trust, a sort of minority stakeholdership, were going to offer, and how they were going to maintain that. Yeah, we had put that question of 1,200 trust members. I was struggling to see how we were going to maintain that, because the proposition over the last 5, 6, 7 years has always been become a trust member and you might get priority tickets. So, you know, the sort of the benefit of, you know, not really having too much of a say in the things going on, because you've got a minority, you know, minority owners now. And then the other benefit of being able to get tickets, you know, at these big games, but you've actually said, yeah, we need something in place for when Hugh Jenkins does decide to move on. We need to sort of keep something bubbling away. Well, on that note, I think we've accidentally got into some quite interesting discussions there for what was going to be a busy roundup show, and it's made the show even busier today. So we'll finish off with, firstly, player of the pod. Ian, I'm going to come to you for player of the pod first.
I am going to give it to, and I think there's a good few candidates, I'm not going to reel them off, I'm going to give it to Macca. I think he had a good, solid game. He was up against Garnacho for a lot of it, and I think he gave as good a count of himself as he possibly could do. So, yeah, I'm going to give it to Macca.
Okay. Ed?
Well, I'm going to give it to Will Evans, because I know every Newport fan is sort of rolling their eyes now when a national media outlet comes to town and starts talking about, did you know only 2 years ago he was a dairy farmer and all the rest of it, and it's all got a bit hackneyed now. But he has been in the eye of the storm over the last 10 days, 2 weeks or so, which I'll talk about more in a minute. But, you know, being at the centre of that media spotlight, he's such a good story and he gives good copy and all the rest of it. And when you are in the middle of that storm and then on match day, you've actually got to turn up and deliver, you know, sorry, I've walked into my own cliche there, haven't I? But he got his goal, he celebrated nicely. It was a great moment for him personally. It might get him a big money move. And I said to my boy, as the players were walking around the pitch and applauding everyone at the end, I said, just enjoy this, because this might be the last time you see Will Evans in an amber shirt. So I sincerely hope that come Saturday he is still a Newport County player. But what a season this has been for the Will Evans story. You know, the way he's gone from being an honest, hardworking, industrious pro to being, you know, the leading light of Newport County. It's been wonderful to watch. He's a superb human being. I've had the privilege of meeting him a couple of times, and whatever he goes on to do, we will all be watching closely. So Will Evans.
Jack, your player of the pod.
Yeah, fully concur. It's got to be Will Evans, and I would just repeat what Ed said, but I won't. But that finish, you know, would make, you know, Gary, who was watching it, and Mike go wish he'd score stuff like that, you know, very, very jealous. It was a bloody brilliant finish. And
poacher's goal.
All the cliches of, yeah, fox in the box and poacher special and all that sort of thing. But, you know, it's a testament to him. And just, I would say, for a guy who wasn't even sure what his position was for a bit, to turn up and do that on television with all the eyes of the world on you is a special sort of player. So player of the pod, yeah, it's got to be Will Evans, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, me and Ian were there at Sutton when he made his debut for us, and he was playing left wing back. And we were like, oh, he looks all right there, like he works hard. But like, we didn't see like anything like this in the pipeline. So it just shows how hard he's worked in the, you know, to sort of get to where he is now. As well, I think the build-up play to that goal was fantastic as well. That was brilliant. Like probably, I'd argue it was the goal of the day. It was beautiful, yeah. Yeah, the ball over to Lewis, though, beforehand, sort of chipped over into that acres of space. Well, I would have gone Will Evans, but I'll give a shout out to Scotty Bennett, because 350 appearances for a League Two club. I think the announcer, when he was given his shirt by Danny Murphy for some reason, the announcer was saying, yeah, it's a really rare occurrence for a player to make so many appearances for a club at our level. And that's right. And it's testament to just how well he works and just how many managers he's, you know, he's had as well. And they all want to keep him, that, you know, he's clearly doing something right. Shout outs or beefs, who's anyone wants to go first? Ed, go ahead.
So it follows on nicely from what I was saying before about being in the center of the media storm. So, you know, we don't get that many inquiries on this pod from national media outlets, but we've been deluged over the last week or 10 days with, you know, everyone's wanted to speak to a Newport County fan. And, you know, we tried to do as many of those as possible. And that's been, you know, it's been great fun, but it's been quite hard work. And I did find myself thinking that if we've had it tough, then poor Louis, who is the club's media officer, who is a very nice, pleasant young man, he must be exhausted today after the last couple of weeks for him. He will have had hundreds, literally hundreds of people wanting to speak to Coughlan, wanting to speak to Elevens. Can we set up an interview? Can we come down and do some filming? Like, his mobile phone must have been red hot over the last few weeks. And as far as I can tell, he's dealt with all of that superbly. If you look at the coverage we've had, he's done it whilst, you know, retaining the kind of politeness that he always seems to have. And there was a moment yesterday when all the limbs were going off after the second goal, you know, we're all leaping about and enjoying it. And of course, if you're the media officer, you know, he's trying to make sure that the social media is updated so that people keep an eye on it on Twitter, can find out what's happened and everything else. So you can't enjoy the moment, which must be, you know, all right, he's not a born and bred Newport County fan, but this is his professional life. And so, you know, he must want to celebrate that goal, but he was doing the professional thing of updating Twitter and everything else. But then I saw, just as I was retaking my seat, I did look along because he was about 10 seats across from me. I saw him do a little fist pump after the goal. And I thought that's probably the closest he's going to get to the limbs that we'd all just been experiencing. So Louis, if you're listening, you've done a superb job over the last 10 days or so. You've covered yourself and the club in glory. And I hope that you enjoyed that fist bump as much as we were all enjoying the limbs.
Yeah, well played. Yeah. Good one. Good shout out there. Any other shout outs?
Yes. So I'd love to shout out the response to the issues in the stand, i.e., you know, I don't see it very often because obviously it's a very rare occasion. But for the county staffers, the medical team to run from the bench over into the busy to help them so quick was, those guys need a shout out. And, you know, it, by all accounts, it wasn't nothing. It wasn't a bit of a wobble or a trip. It was pretty bad. So, shout out to those guys. This is not a beef. It's a bit of a funny shout out. Did anyone really enjoy the fact that almost every substitution, the announcer would just get it terribly wrong?
Yes.
And every single time he would write, coming off his Scurries checks notes, and he would still get it wrong. Bless him. You're a volunteer. Love you. Doing it for free. Every single time he would say, and here comes like Diallo, and it's quite clearly not Diallo. And I'm looking to my right, and there's Stuart Pearce, just with the most perplexed look on his face. That's not Ahmed Diallo. And it just, it just tickled me.
The announcer's got two catchphrases now. One is free gripper, and the other is correction.
Correction, brilliant. It made losing 4-2 all the more fun.
Shout outs or beefs for Ian?
Yeah, shout out. I've got one of each. So shout out. I'm really enjoying, because I don't like nasty chants and all that sort of stuff. I'm loving the sort of relatively new home chant, the everywhere we go, you know, watching Newport County putting on a show. I absolutely love that. It's like got hints of old school, but it's really great. I just like it. It makes me smile when I hear that being sung. And when it was rocking in the Azel, I thought that was great. That just made me really smile. I like that. It's a relatively new song, isn't it? And I'm enjoying that. That's my shout out. My beef is myself. My beef is to, I'm having a beef myself for my shambles attempt after doing all that recording in the Murringer to delete the file. So I'm beef with myself.
Oh, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. It happens to the best of us, I'm sure. That chant is like something out of like the 1930s, isn't it? It's very, very old school.
I love it.
But I love it. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think that wraps us up. We'll be back after next Saturday with a review of the Swindon game, which, let's be honest, is another huge game, huge, relatively local derby as well. So do get down there if you can, if you've caught the Newport County bug, if you're at Wrexham, if you're at Man United, or if you're at neither of those games, you know, watch the game on BBC One, you thought, I want a piece of that, get down to Swindon, support them. They need your support more than ever. You can keep up with us over on all of the various social channels, 9012XL's Twitter, X, whatever it's called, LinkedIn, through the forum. You can donate through our Ko-fi account as well. And that'll be all the links in the show notes. But until then, all that remains is for me to thank the panel, Ed, Ian, and Jack. And I've been Jamie. And yeah, keep it canty.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.